on today's Compassion Radio.
ISIS has not grown in the past 10 years because of people's aspirations. ISIS exists because there's desperation and hopelessness. Mm-hmm. So anywhere where we can head off hopelessness with meaning, with love, and with identity and purpose, and with Christ, then we have protected the world from great evils, not just saved souls that are right there in front of us.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Tracking the triumph of God in every nation on earth. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's edition of Compassion Radio. And friend, we are so grateful to have you there with us each and every day, whether you are a regular listener or maybe you're just kind of passing through. We hope that you'll stick around. Jim here in studio alongside Cher Nelson. Hello there, Cher.
Good to be here again, Jim. Thank you.
And Bram Floria is connected to us as well via our Texas outlet. Hello there, Bram.
Across the table and across the country. Yes, I'm glad to be back with you.
Well, Bram, the last couple of days we've been talking about how you really were imparting the whole idea of the ministry of showing up in Uganda, of all places, as you were traveling alongside the good friend Jim Jennings and a special crew that he had there. And you were telling us about some of the experiences in a particular refugee camp and just some of the folks that you met with. And we're going to continue kind of along that vein today. So where do you want to pick it up?
Well, there are 1,000 stories we should tell, and hopefully we'll get a few of the key ones across on the radio. Now, of course, to recap, we were at the invitation and the good graces of the folks at Conscience International, which is Jim Jennings' organization. He was assessing the needs that are upcoming in that part of Africa because Uganda is a crossroads of many nations. It's also at the hub of a huge amount of conflict. Although our eyes are trained toward ISIS and the Middle East, most of the world's refugees right now are in Eastern and Central Africa. And there are all kinds of reasons, political and religious, that are causing great turmoil. And in the past year alone, 2.5 million people stumbling into Uganda for safe haven in a country that only has 40 million to start with. So that's where we start. And Jim knew these things because he knows the people that serve in these places. If the news doesn't show up to report it, Jim still knows about these things. So he was very gracious to me in saying, I know Norm can't come anymore, but I want you to be there with me to see it for yourself. It's the first time I'm going, so let's go see it together. So I went. We've talked a lot about the Bidibidi camp as being one of the best examples of what's good and what's bad about refugee care. So many good things are happening in this camp. There's real peace there. There are tribes that are working together that have never talked to each other or have been at war with each other. But primarily because what we have here is a group of tens and hundreds of thousands of widows and orphans that are probably never going to see the men in their lives again. And that provides for them an opportunity to take a real hard look at what it means to be a country, what it means to be a society, what it means to be a family. But it also means that a huge amount of knowledge, of wisdom, ability to produce is just lost. And you have all these young kids, many, many, many boys, that are going to grow up without fathers. So here we sit with this refugee camp, this settlement really, with no opportunities to learn from men who can teach them. And the ones they do have are very rare and very few. But I did meet a couple of them that really were the single lighthouses that I saw in the entire camp for what it means to grow up to be a man. But, you know, let's talk about some of the pictures that we talked about over the past couple of days. There's a picture I'm looking at right now, Jimmy, from my Facebook archive of the Twajiji Primary School. Now, this was at the very center of one of the zones of the Yumbe District of the Bidibidi Refugee Settlement, and it was a school. And when I say school, I'm speaking rather relatively, because there's a couple of big tents that are mostly torn up now and a couple of block buildings that are attached to that. This one school serves as the educational hub of an entire district. So you've got maybe tens of thousands of people living there, and probably close to 10,000 of them are children who are of school age that are crammed in these two tents. And I looked at the one tent, had kids maybe from like second grade up to fifth or sixth grade. They're sitting cheek to jowl, like get one hand in front of them on the table in front, and they're like literally scratching stuff into the table in front of them. They've got no paper. They've got no writing instruments. They've just got whatever they can pick up, a stick. And in the front of the room is a big chalkboard, and someone's teaching something there. So you've got hundreds and hundreds of these kids in this tent trying to learn something with no equipment.
And as you said, you're using the term tent loosely. There is a wooden frame with posts every maybe 6 feet or so, and then a structure of a roof over which are laid tarps in the most rudimentary conditions you can possibly imagine. It looks like one teacher at the front of this long, long tent with one blackboard, and you're supposed to learn. We talk about classes being overly big at 38 children. We're talking probably 3,800 in one class.
And it was just one shift as well. They apparently they do this three times a day. So you've got thousands of kids going through there. And I've got to give credit to the teachers that are there. They have their own set of tents that the UN set up for them, and they're rotating through. They have a little bit more space, perhaps, but they are doing something that's impossible. They are holding attention and hopefully the hopes and aspirations of thousands of children. So you know that they care. They're not there because they don't want to be there.
Now, Bram, you're talking about your experiences in Uganda in this particular refugee camp. Why don't we just kind of refresh it with our listeners a little bit? Why exactly are these people in this situation of being refugees?
Well, of course, refugee means that you've crossed international borders. And there is a whole other class of people called internally displaced persons, which is the same thing. It just means they haven't crossed international border. But between the wars north of them, in Sudan back in the 90s and 2000s, where Darfur was trying to break away, where South Sudan was getting tired of the torment of the Janjaweed running south from the north to torment them, they finally broke away. And now you've got a brand new nation called South Sudan, but as a nation didn't last very long. They made it maybe 5 or 6 months into their new nationhood when they suddenly broke out in all kinds of internecine warfare right there in South Sudan. And now one tribe is predominantly siding with one of the presidential candidates that won, and the rest of the tribes are siding with another candidate who probably did win but had the election stolen from him. So,
and North Sudan is fighting both of them.
Exactly. And trying to rile them both up against each other, of course, because it wants the territory back because there's lots of oil down there. And all of the refugees that came from the northern Sudan areas into South Sudan are now pushing other refugees south of there, and pretty soon they're all spilling over into Uganda. So that's where we're ending up. We have 2.5 million people out of the Sudanese areas that are now in Uganda and the surrounding countries.
And you said the size is about the size of Oregon.
The entire land area of Uganda is about the size of Oregon, and they already have a population of about 40 or so million people. They don't have much land to play with, and the land that's there is very expensive. That was something that stunned me. In Uganda as a country, no matter where you are, land is extraordinarily expensive. And I mean like U.S. extraordinary. Why? Because all the super rich across those countries pour all their money into Uganda as a speculator's market because it's one of the few countries that's stable. So here's all of this probably kleptocracy money from all around Africa being dumped in there and crowding out anybody from any of their properties and buying up all the properties they can get their hands on. So no one can afford to buy anymore. So everyone's a sharecropper and a renter. And those who own the land, of course, charge exorbitant rents. So if you can afford with the rest of your family to rent a house, you might take 30 people to be able to afford to do it. So it's a very strange economy right now.
What's the prediction? Can it sustain itself that way?
Well, so far there doesn't seem to be any slowing down of this because there's still lots of money trying to escape Libya and Egypt and Sudan and even Kenya. So there are a few nations that still are absorbing this cash, but again, it's tied up in real estate, so it's not really liquid cash. There's not really money to invest in jobs and businesses. People are just trying to save what money they can get out of their countries and stuff it someplace. So I can't tell you what's going to happen with the economy. I do know that as far as cash flow goes, Ugandan government's really strapped because they're having to foot the bill for all these camps and for the upkeep and the militarization of the borders, make sure that terrorist groups don't work their way into Uganda. So there's not a lot of way of taxation because nobody has a job.
Are they providing anything to the camps other than sorghum and fresh water?
Working with the UN, they're providing security. In other words, they will jump to provide security if something riles up. The camps right now are at peace, and there's not any big tribalism going on there. That doesn't mean that won't happen anytime soon. It just means that for right now, there's not a cause.
But I just know that the World Food Program is out of money,
yes,
generally for around the world. So is there any other food relief coming into these camps?
What I saw was being trucked up by the UN through the HCR, which is the High Commission for Human Rights. So it was coming out of Kampala and being shipped in by airplane. And it happens like once a month or so that they actually drop the bags of meal.
Okay, so no meat available.
No meat, no. And all of the other vegetables and other proteins are grown directly in the camps.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So some seed was provided, and which provided the stock for the beginning of the gardens, and they are very mm-hmm. productive. And, of course, you're on the equator, so there's no seasons. There's just rainy season and dry season. So people are producing food year-round. So they're able to get a lot out of this little postage stamp plots they're on. So as far as I can tell, the government is doing everything they can to keep peace in the camps by doing the practical things, providing what meal is necessary for some starches, providing security for the camps if necessary, keeping the roads clear, making sure the trucks can get through, things like that. So they know they're stuck with the Sudanese people in their country for a while. They're not resenting them, and they're not trying to keep them in prison. There are no gates, whatever they have to go through to get out of the camp. But there's also very little in the way of any other cities around. It's a very remote place. So what little commerce is happening is like right outside the camp perimeter. They have a little pop-up kind of community mm-hmm. of businesses that will sell sundries and plastic goods, maybe some cooking utensils and things. But most of that's done by barter because there's no cash. But it's like one way in, one way out, and the nearest real town is a good 15 miles down the road. And nobody's mm-hmm. got any vehicles. So everyone's walking to get here and there. But I did meet, for example, one lady who had not gotten onto the list yet for the supplies, so she wasn't getting an allotment yet. And she had four or five children to feed, and she was new to the camp. So the only thing she could do was use the last bit of cash she had to buy a bag of flour, and she knew how to whip up some sweet biscuits. And she begged and borrowed what she could for some sugar and bake these biscuits and would take them up the road herself or send them with a courier and sell these little, it looked like little cornmeal rolls or whatever you might get with a chicken mm-hmm. meal here in the States. And she would sell those in the little pop-up village outside the walls. And she'd sell them for like maybe a penny a piece. And each bag would make her maybe 300 of these little loaves. And she had a little starter to get the dough to rise. She was nursing that starter along. And with that bag, which cost three times as much as it would in Kampala, she would make these 300 biscuits. She'd sell all of them down there in the village and earn maybe $3. More than half of that would go back into buying the next supply.
Right.
So if she was lucky on a given day, she'd be able to earn about a dollar, which she would have to try to buy other things while her garden is just beginning to grow. So she's having to use that to buy whatever food she can from other people in the camp or from people out in the village outside the camp. But she's very enterprising, and mm-hmm. she's working her tail off to mm-hmm. make this thing happen. But think about that, having to walk 5 miles each way to go sell a bucket of little biscuits and earn a dollar for the day. And has to use that to feed your five children. That's where they're starting.
I'm always staggered, no matter where we go in the world, the industriousness of the people for so little reward is yeah. just amazing. It's hard to conceive that I would be that way. The hope that springs eternal that what I'm doing can bring some good
yeah.
is just amazing. And many of these people do that without any reliance on the Lord because they don't know Him.
Yeah.
Thank you, friend, for listening to today's Compassion Radio. We'll get right back to this discussion in just a moment. Please stick with us for a timely announcement towards the end of our broadcast time today. We'll share about our ongoing project for the month of August called Christ in the Conflict, and also about our special premium we're offering for your support of this Boots on the Ground daily radio ministry. Our phone number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. And online, we can be found at CompassionRadio.com. Let's get back now to our program.
Now, many of them are Christian born,
mm-hmm.
but don't really have a knowledge of who the Lord is. And it's a tricky thing explaining to them how good God is when people are in this situation. On the other hand, they are always more open to hearing about the Lord because they have nothing.
Yeah.
And just to know that someone loves them and cares about them and is cognizant of their situation at all times is enough to make them want to know the Lord and to belong to Him, just to be known by Him.
As I walked through the camp, it's a very green place, and it was a fairly dry part of the year, so it's obvious that there's enough rains there to sustain the crops.
Mm-hmm.
But I look around there, and I'm seeing all these people. I mean, everywhere you look, there's a crop of people. So besides the okra and the zucchinis and stuff that's growing along the ground, there's constantly children popping up and women with back-breaking labor standing up and trying to stretch out a bit. They're everywhere. So I couldn't help but think the fields are white. I mean, there's a harvest waiting to happen here. And we did talk with a lot of pastors in Uganda about what's going to happen next. How are they going to reach these people for Jesus and bring those who have a nominal understanding of the gospel or have a church kind of culture to bring them into the kingdom in an active way? It's going to happen. I believe that. And they're really ready for it, especially for these children. You've got probably 60 or 70% of the people living in this camp of almost 300,000 that are children. I mean, I'm talking like 10 years old and younger.
Yeah.
So 100,000 kids. What an opportunity here to bring Jesus in a living way and build a kingdom culture.
Especially with widows, too, who have no one else to rely on.
Yeah.
How precious to find a Savior who will love you, who will care for you, who will know what you're going through, and to believe that he will supply your needs. Their concept of needs is far different than ours.
Mm-hmm.
We think we need a whole bunch. They think they need to survive.
Exactly. And echoing on what Cher said earlier, just the constant reminders, Bram, of how much we take for granted. It is just absolutely off the charts how blessed we are living where we are here in the U.S.
And of course, we get stuck sometimes in compartmentalism, that we just start looking at what we have and seeing the material things around us as the only things that constitute blessing. It's not. But there is something that needs to start at least there to say, for today's bread and for all the extra days we have stored up in our pantries, God, we give you thanks. We could start there at least. But beyond that, we're talking about vision and opportunity and the things that your mind can even comprehend or allow to happen. That's where I worry about the poverty. The poverty of vision, of hope. And if something doesn't start breaking for these children, if something doesn't start happening where male models, figures of people that can show how to be a young man, a young woman that grows up confident in the Lord and able to provide for families and build a future, then there's real desperation that comes out of that. And from real desperation comes deception. We've seen that all over the Middle East in the past 20, 30 years. ISIS has not grown in the past 10 years because of people's aspirations. ISIS exists because there's desperation and hopelessness. So anywhere where we can head off hopelessness with meaning, with love, and with identity and purpose, and with Christ, then we have protected the world from great evils, not just save souls that are right there in front of us. So we need to keep thinking in terms of how can we pray into being things that are not yet. Churches, families, bringing young men back to their families that might never have thought they could be reunited again, that miracles would happen, that the war would cease in South Sudan. And that's the kind of stuff we need to be praying for.
Okay, I want to throw you a hard ball. Why do we think it will ever be different in Africa? It's been primitive. It's been poverty-stricken. It's been uneducated. It's been tribal for centuries and centuries. Maybe God means it to be that way. Why should we mess with it?
Well, you crossed the line on that last statement.
I know.
Let me start this way. When we think about our own country, our forefathers gave us the vision for what it's like to be a free people. It's only an idea, but we act on those ideas. So why do we think America can be better? Because we believe it. It has nothing to do with our innate deservedness. We don't deserve America any more than anyone else does. Well, we are the ones that were born here, and what a birthright we have. Do I think Africa can change now? Yes, I do, because God is still making people like him. There's not a person alive on this planet that was not made in God's image. And with God's image comes the capacity to see things that are invisible now and to make things into reality that have never been before. The reason Africa is the way it is has nothing to do with the people of Africa. And here I get political. Africa suffers today because of the sins of conquerors from centuries past. Now, great good came with the missions that were started and reached to Africa. There are a great many people who died loving Jesus and loving the people they were serving in Africa. There are a great many other evil people that did evil things to the people of Africa and claimed they had the right to do so because they had some sort of special birthright and dispensation from God to do so. That is great evil. And they're paying the price for it now. We saw that in Rwanda. Why did the Hutus rise up and slaughter the Tutsis for the third time in a row and cause the great genocide of 1994? Because they had believed a lie told them by their Belgian conquerors a century before, that they were different than their own countrymen, that because these people were taller than you, that you were lesser people. Why did the people that were taller buy into it? Because they were given the temptation of a little bit of power under the conquerors. And suddenly, two peoples emerged out of nothing, out of a lie. And these people were the same stock. They were the same genetics. They were the people of Rwanda. Yet someone told them that they were different, and they believed it. And over the next 150 years, they learned to hate each other because of it. That can change. In fact, it has changed. An entire nation of Rwanda now is coming full circle to realize they are one Rwandan people, and we bought a lie, and we need to repent of that. And so the government, even though it's a military government, has put the entire nation on a course of reconciliation and repentance to believe something new about themselves that really was an old truth, that they were one people. And they're acting different now. And they're literally learning how to forgive the people that murdered their own families and to give them a way out so they don't have to spend the rest of their life in prison for having been a mass murderer. They can literally see a way forward to restoration and to live with the people that they oppressed if they would admit their sins and confess to their own people that they've done these things. They have the opportunity then for the community to say, we forgive you, and therefore we will no longer forbid you from living with our people. You are one of us again. We restore you to your place in society. That's what Rwanda is doing now. That's not something that people believe is possible in Africa a lot of times, but it is. And it's not Americans, it's not Europeans that did this. It was Rwandans. Because God got a hold of a few key people and changed their whole worldview. Yes, I believe Africa can change. It is changing. And it has great vision and great hope where God is allowed to speak his truth and his light in there.
Thank you, Bram.
Well, thank you indeed. Another powerful edition of Compassion Radio today. And Bram, we really look forward to getting back together with you again real soon to continue in this theme of this powerful trip that you were able to take to Uganda and beyond.
Thank you, Jimmy. Again, I got to say, it's a real honor to be able to represent our listening audience in these places and to hopefully bring back the story that God wants to tell. This is about God's story in action. And the more we get a chance to go see what he's doing through his people, the more we have a chance to inspire you, our friends,
yes,
to do things that have lasting, eternal value. The project we have for this month is very much tied to the same spirit of what I was seeing in Uganda, how God's active on the front lines and transforming lives right where there's the greatest danger.
But take all this and put it into your prayer life, people. Pray for our brothers and sisters around the world, and pray for those who need to be our brothers and sisters who still haven't heard.
Thanks, Cher. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, Bram.
This is Cher Nelson with a special word for those of you who are actively involved with supporting the broadcast ministry of Compassion Radio. You are our heroes. We're also grateful to each of you who give to our Compassion projects as well. Without you, we could not be the hands and feet of Jesus in these difficult places. But those of you who stand with us in the financial support of the ministry, especially you who have pledged a monthly gift, you are the backbone of everything we do, and we are grateful and blessed by your understanding of the need. I pray for blessings and the joy of service in your life.
As a special thank you this month for your support of Compassion Radio and our Christ in the Conflict project, we have a life-changing and highly entertaining movie. For your special gift of $50 or more, we'd love to send you on DVD or Blu-ray the powerful and highly successful theatrical release of War Room. This film demonstrates both the spiritual battle that prayer really is and beautifully portrays how God answers the desperate pleas of His children. This film has launched 1,000 prayer movements across America, and we can't think of a better tool to encourage and equip your heart to join this battle. Order yours today, and thank you so much for standing with us. And don't forget about our vision team. If you haven't joined yet, now is the time. Your monthly commitment of even a few dollars a month goes a long way. And remember, you're helping the Word and Compassion of Christ to reach the farthest corners of the globe. Reach out to us by phone at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail, we're at Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And you can always find us online at CompassionRadio.com. On behalf of Bram Floria, Cher Nelson, and the entire Compassion Radio team, I'm Jim Governale. Have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.